the buzzer, McCord on its way. Oh my goodness!
They have to get it. With no timeouts, they do.
Courtside with Greenberg and Dokic, the definitive college basketball podcast.
Hey, welcome to the World's Greatest Podcast. I'm Dan Dokic. Seth Greenberg and I have been doing this, and it's been absolutely fantastic. Seth Greenberg, you're not running hot today. You just got stuff.
Yeah, I got stuff. You know, it's interesting to me. Big Ten, your conference, or the one you played in as a player and one you were a guru in, they're a little bit of a mess. Yeah. And what I mean by a little bit of a mess, the communication, obviously, with the situation with football. I mean, obviously, they want to move it to the spring, but then I hear like three or four schools want to have like a round robin where they're going to play two games each. It seems like it's a little bit disjointed. Then you got the Pac-12. They just hired a commissioner for college football. Like, I was in the ACC forever. We always had a commissioner of basketball. Senior Associate Commissioner of Basketball. I don't know why that's anything new, but it just seems like everyone is trying to create layers to protect their own rear ends. And look, the decisions are very, very serious. I'm 100% understanding the decisions are serious, but you know, I think that people don't understand how the NCAA works. First of all, the NCAA is not responsible for these decisions. The NCAA, they run championships. They enforce the rules. They have Division I councils made up of presidents and commissioners and SWAs and faculty reps that create legislation. So, like, everyone's killing the NCAA, and the NCAA is not perfect, but it's not their responsibility. Each individual conference basically governs their conference, no different than like governors do govern their own, their states. So I just think that right now, college athletics has got to figure some things out. And each conference obviously has to figure some things out. But the biggest thing is for us, when is the best time to start basketball? When is the best time? You're seeing college campuses close. You're seeing people trying to create layers of separation so they don't have to be held responsible. Forget about all that. When's the best time to start college basketball, in your opinion?
Right after, truthfully, I think that college basketball should start at Thanksgiving, kind of like it normally does, and move forward. We've had this discussion, you know, it creates a natural bubble. Schools are basically sending everybody home if they're on campus. And the week of Thanksgiving is basically, if it's not this Friday before the week of Thanksgiving is it for college campuses until June. Or January, in most cases. So, you know, Seth, that's what I think. But I'm telling you, the first thing you got to figure out is what's the expectation. Does one positive COVID test shut everything down? Does two? Does none? Is this new, supposedly, NFLPA or NBAPA sponsored saliva test, is that a game changer? Is that coming out? Is that real? I think Dan Gavitt's done a really good job of saying, hey, wait a second, we're going to make some decisions here in the middle of September. And that gives enough time for a variety of things. One, to see what happens when colleges come back. I saw a video yesterday of my school, Indiana University, and at Indiana University, there were these massive parties where this is the week kids come back to school, and these massive parties, nobody wearing a mask, huge parties. I can't imagine that Indiana University is going to be in school after Labor Day. I just can't. I mean, so to me, the number one thing you got to figure out, and I think Dan Gavitt's smart for giving it a month here and saying, let's see what happens with campuses. So, and let's see what happens with saliva tests. That's just common sense to me. Everybody in our media, I'm in the media, wants to make these broad decisions. This is when it should happen. This is when this. Okay, fine. But the truth of the matter is, I think Dan Gavitt is taking a leadership role, and I applaud him for common sense, which isn't so common these days. Look, people about, well, today on GetUp, you can't have kids come back, play basketball or football without students on campus unless you pay them. It fascinates me that guys in the media still don't understand, particularly former players, still don't understand that college athletes are paid. they are paid, including enough cash to buy a car if they want. People always say, well, it's not actual cash. No, yes, it is. I mean, my son made five something every 2 weeks on top of everything being paid. In my world, that's payment. So there's a lot of stupidity right now, but I applaud Dan Gavitt for saying, look, let's just take a minute, figure this out, see what happens. I do. That's how I look at it, Seth Mo.
Well, I 100% agree with that. I had Craig Robinson on the web show yesterday, and he said basically Dan Gavitt's patience, looking at all your options, keeping all options on the table, being patient, trying to figure out in that moment in time what's the best situation. Now, I think the biggest thing is going to be, I think if conferences can have set protocols, like I asked Craig, I said, can the NABC set a protocol across the board for college basketball that conferences would adapt? Now, the problem is that not all conferences could afford that protocol. And that's going to be the problem with scheduling, because when you think about scheduling, you think about non-conference tournaments or not non-conference games. If you're Indiana and you're playing Indiana State, and Indiana State's testing once a week or once every 2 weeks, and you're Indiana and you're testing three times a week, right? Why would you risk putting your players in the situation to basically catch the virus from, say, be an asymptomatic player? But if you have everyone under the same protocol, now all of a sudden it's a more level playing field in terms of controlling the virus. So that's number one. Number two is, do you create bubbles? I like, you know, you could create great bubbles for some non-conference round robins, or create bubbles every week for conference round robins, especially if we're dealing with distance learning and online education. Because if you're dealing with that, you can go to a bubble destination. You can have class. You can have study hall. You can be playing games, all right, all at the same time, because that's how normal students do it. Because normal students take on distance learning. Normal students take online classes. So, like, for all the people that say you can't have online education and play athletics, I hate to tell you people, that's going on right now. There are schools where basketball players don't even go to a class. They're completely online in education. There are schools where students don't go to a class. They're completely online in education. So, like, the hypocrisy of people saying, well, you can't have both is absolutely absurd. And quite honestly, it's propaganda. It's just pure propaganda.
This is why this is the world's greatest podcast, because people believe the stupidity that folks in our medium that have agendas tell them. I mean, let's be honest. Every time you hear somebody with an agenda, and everybody, look, whether it's professors, media guys, the money these guys have made and the prestige they've gained from the fear porn of college athletics, of the, well, they don't get paid, they're being blah, 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 is complete nonsense and a disconnect between real people and these folks. And I get a kick out of it. But the truth of the matter is, online classes have been had. Players are being paid. So you know what? If a guy doesn't want to play, I wouldn't even be mad if you said, hey, look, if a guy don't want to play, fine, give him a scholarship, adios. If you want to transfer, particularly for college football, there's no reason guys shouldn't be able to transfer from the Big Ten or the Pac-12 and go play somewhere. There's no reason at all. I mean, there's zero reason you should be able to. I had a coach tell me, look, why do we even test? Guy gets sick, take care of him. Why we, you know, and I'm like, well, I mean, I don't know the real answer to that. I know the panicked answer to that as well. You get it, you spread it to your aunt, your uncle, your cousin, everybody died. Okay, fine. I mean, that's the panic answer. I don't know the real answer to why we wouldn't just not test. You get sick. We don't test everybody for the flu every day.
And that's basically the reason you test is because you could potentially infect.
That's just what I'm saying. You don't know that, and I don't know that. We just believe what we read. Nobody knows that. I mean, that's just what people, you know, we're supposed to believe what we read. The idea is that people in their 20s, I agree you should test. I'm not saying you shouldn't test. I'm absolutely saying you should. But I've had people tell me, you know, I had a coach today. He's like, hey, okay, kid gets sick, you take care of it. Because most of this is asymptomatic. And the kids are going to be in a bubble. Who are they actually spreading it to? I don't know. I don't agree with that. But I also don't know. I mean, look, so many of us are trying to be doctors. And now we're trying to be lawyers. Truthfully, this is a very simple solution to me. If you can't play, you can't play, period. But if you can play, the online thing is easy. The freaking bubble thing is easy in college basketball. If you want to have it. If you don't want to have it, then don't have it.
We'd like to welcome in Tennessee head coach Rick Barnes. Barnesy, what has the last 5 months been like to you?
Well, I tell you what it feels like. It feels like you go to the driving range, putting green and chipping area, but you never get to play. That's what it feels like. With our guys, you know, we were able to do a little bit with them, but we couldn't compete, which that's been really hard for them. They want to play in the worst kind of way, but personally, it's broke up a routine I've been doing about, you know, 40-some years, and it's definitely been different.
Hey, Coach, when I live, my stepdaughter plays softball at Harvard, and their whole deal has been canceled this year, last year, the whole deal. I've seen the toll this has taken on her. What has been the mental impact on your players, in terms of mental health impact on your players?
Well, I don't think there's any question it's there because, you know, it's like I said, you know, you go out and you do certain things that you're allowed to do. We weren't allowed to have, you know, competition, and you just feel like, what are we doing here? And, you know, it was tough. And every day the players would ask, you know, the question, you know, we're going to get to play and what's going on and all that. So they would they'd still ask that question. And we obviously feel like we will. But for them, it has worn on them more than you think in terms of not being able to play. I mean, they've been able to use our facility for everything except playing, you know, 1-on-1, 2-on-2, 3-on-3, 4-on-4. And I'm not naive enough to think that they haven't found places to go play, but that's been a big thing for them, not being able to just do something that they love.
You know, Rick, that's an interesting thing. Cause like I talked to McCrone the other day, and he didn't even bring his team back on campus because he said, you know what? They're playing pickup and they're working with workout guys and they're competing. And he said, the only thing they would let them do on campus is basically shoot with the manager. So, I mean, it's a different environment. Like you said, they ask questions. What kind of questions do they ask?
Well, you know, just that, you know, first of all, as the summer went on, we were allowed to phase into where, you know, the coaches could go on the floor and, you know, work them out the way we used to. You guys have been around to know that one time we just got to do individual work with them. So that's what the summer ended up, which obviously isn't all bad. There's some, believe me, we really worked on individual skill development with our guys. But the fact is, while we're doing all that, they want to see if it works when they play. They want to see the improvement there. But they have done an unbelievable job here at the University of Tennessee, creating our little bubble here and our guys that were in it. And the fact is, our players did a pretty good job too. And the biggest thing was that, you know, there weren't a lot of people on campus, so there wasn't a lot of socializing going on. It was really, you know, summer school, coming into the gym, and we tried to keep them as busy as we could with doing that. But the fact is, it all comes back to the one question is, did they take the virus serious? I think so, because we did have some positive tests, and they learned from it that, you know, you can't take anything not for granted. And but the biggest thing is, I do think they understand this is serious, and they can't be in big crowds right now. And they're going to have to sacrifice, as this year goes on, that they can't go out and socialize when other people aren't taking it very seriously. And some people aren't, and you guys know that. But they really want to play, and that's the biggest thing they keep asking us, are we going to play?
Coach, do you anticipate basketball being played?
I do, Dan. But you know what? Right now, to be quite honest with you, I think it's the furthest thing from everyone's mind. We've got to get football up and going. I mean, there is no doubt in my mind, and I've said that from day one. I do think that there's contingent plans in place that people are putting in place for basketball, for all the different tournaments that are out there. I think that, but I think it's of utmost importance that we play football. I really do. And, you know, one time someone asked me, do you think you can play football? The students aren't back on campus. And everybody was talking about the football team, which is 85, 90 guys, whatever it is. But yet when you bring back 20-some thousand students, you know, we've got to see what's going to happen over these next 3 weeks. I think we've got great leadership here. I think the SEC's done a great job of taking their time and saying, hey, this is what we're planning on doing. If something comes up, we've got to adjust, we'll adjust. And to be quite honest with you, I don't think there's been a great deal of thought put into basketball other than the NCAA, you know, the people that are dealing with the NCAA tournament, the schedule, all that. I think conferences are more concerned about right now the ones that have chosen to play. Can we get this off the ground and get it going, which there's no doubt in my mind, I think we can.
Rick, you guys back on campus, your students back on campus now, correct?
We are. We are.
So, like, you know, you talked about your players and understanding the seriousness of it. You know, I always say this is going to test cultures. This is going to test the types of teammates you have in the program. And this is going to test the discipline guys have in the program. How much time do you spend how much time do you spend talking to your guys about the decisions that they make could impact if we have a season? You know, how long the season will be, when the season will start. Do you think your campus can coexist with the virus and in-class education? I mean, is that going to be hard at Tennessee?
I think it's hard. I would tell you the thing that we have done more than anything is wear a mask. Like this year, this summer, if you came in our weight room with our team, I promise you they wore masks the entire time they worked out. They came on the court. When we were allowed to be with them, they didn't have to wear a mask, but we did. And it was all good. It was all really good. I think the biggest thing is honestly getting them to understand you got to wear a mask. You got to wear a mask. And our guys, again, I really tell you, they did a good job. They really did. Do we have to remind some of them to be the same guys? You have to remind to do whatever, you know. But the guys that took it seriously, and I will go back to this. Todd Wright, who was my strength coach at Texas and Clemson for over 20 years, is now with the Clippers. And when he left his family to go into the bubble, he told him he might not see him for 3 months. And that's the sacrifices that those guys have to make to get done what they're doing down in Orlando right now. So I don't think it's a whole lot to ask students to realize what's going on. And this is a different year. This is a different time right now. And I think the next 3-4 months are critical, because I do think we'll get to a vaccine soon. But the fact is, we all have to sacrifice doing things that we might want to do. And everybody says, well, that's hard for young people. Well, it's really not. If you've got a goal and there's something that you want to get done, it's easy to do that if you have the discipline to do it.
Well, I agree with that. And my concern is I'm looking at pictures from Indiana, my school, last night, and I'm seeing so many students without a mask. I see so many parties, and I'm thinking to myself, you know, a couple things. One, man, are these guys foolish to putting themselves at risk? And then I thought about sports. I'm like, this is probably ultimately why sports may have a hard time in college athletics, Rick, because you're going to do the right thing. Your trainers, everybody's going to do the right thing. And I just worry about, I don't worry about it, but I watch these pictures and I'm like, what the hell? I mean, kids almost that are trying to do the right thing have no chance at a college campus. And it seems.
Well, you're right. You're right on it. That's exactly right. And we, our chancellor, Dante Plowman, who's the best I've ever been around, she went on Anderson Cooper yesterday and just said they've been told what the code of conduct is. And if people don't adhere to it, you know, they're putting themselves in a position for code of conduct violations, which could lead to being expelled. And you're right, Dan. That's where it's got us, these, you know, parties and all this and all that. That's where it all has blown these numbers up, especially on campuses. And you go back and they're all being traced back to parties or big gatherings. And, you know, to be considered somebody in close contact, you're supposed to be within, 6 feet of somebody for 10 minutes. But when you're jammed in a room with everybody, I mean, who knows what's, you know, and we can only imagine. But I think you're right. I think that's the real challenge. And that's why I think these next couple of weeks before we get in the, I think the first football game is September 26th, something like that. I think how we handle this through here with the students now, not because you're right about the athletic programs. They're doing the right things. I promise you, I think that everybody is doing what they think they've been told to do, and they're taking it very, very seriously. Now can we, the students, be a part of it and not really get in the way to where it's causes a major problem?
Rick, change the subject. You guys had some guys put their names in, contemplate leaving. Right now, your team, you've got a great mix of some really talented freshmen. You've had great teams before. What's your expectation for this team?
You know, I think we got a chance. There's no doubt about it. I would have liked to have been normal. I would have liked to have had our young guys, because there's no question, would they be further along? Yes. You know, I learned a long time ago, older guys can take all you can give them, but they don't need it. Younger guys need all you can give them, but can't take it. So you wish you had more time with them, you know, but the fact is they've done a good job with the circumstances. We're proud of what they've done. Has it been hard on them? And you guys know you did it. I mean, that jump from high school to college, even when they think they work hard, they don't have a clue what that means. And so it's as it meant, but they've responded to it and they've all gotten better with it, you know. But you know, we're excited with this group of guys. We've got a lot of different ways we can play, and our older guys have been terrific leaders, and they've done it by example. You mentioned guys that go into the drafts. There was some concern there with, like, say, Eve Pons, you know, agents telling him there's not going to be a college basketball season. Well, you know, I don't know how they – I don't even think we're at that point to think about college basketball, because I'm telling you, football is so important to all of us that have it. It's so important that we've got to get through that first. But I do think that we're going to play basketball, and I'm hopeful it's going to be normal. I just think we just got to ride this wave right now until we see what happens. And we've got plenty of time somewhere in the middle of, everybody says September. I think you can wait up until October. You got to think about it. When we used to start, we started October the 15th. And Fifth, you remember when we didn't play until what, December, or, you know, December the 1st or right after Thanksgiving. So, you know, we can make this thing work, and whether it goes to bubbles or whatever, I don't know how that's going to work. I'm sure that people are talking about it. I do know this. We will have an NCAA tournament. And so to have an NCAA tournament, we've got to have a regular season some way, somehow.
Well, we'll have an NCAA tournament.
Financially, I just think it's too important to too many people. It already has impacted schools that have had to drop sports because of their cut from the NCAA tournament. There's already been schools, and not just mid-level schools, those that are, you know, mid to high major schools that have had to drop sports because of the revenue that they weren't able to get from the NCAA tournament. And that affects more schools than we can imagine. Are the Power Five in a position? Some, no doubt, some more than others, no doubt about it. There's no doubt about it. But it's so important for those mid-level schools and low-level schools and mid to high majors. They need the NCAA, the money from the NCAA tournament.
And those, there's a trickle-down effect, Rick, as you know. I mean, like, you think about all those mid- and low-level schools that rely on the guarantee money from your football games, from the basketball games, that basically support the rest of athletic departments. These schools need college athletics for their athletic programs, or basketball and football, for their athletic programs to survive, not just one sport, but their actual total athletic programs to survive.
Yeah. Well, think about our football team this year. You know, because we're only playing conference games, Troy, I think it's maybe UNC Charlotte Furman. I would assume that guarantee for football is somewhere around $1 million. Furman drives over here, it probably costs them, what, $200,000 to get everything over here and do what they need to do, maybe not even that much. So that's an $800,000 plus, I'm sure, that they need for their athletic departments. And I tell you what, I mean, I've got a number of guys that are ADs that have had to cut sports, and it kills them to do that. You know, I mean, they really don't want to do it, but financially they just can't survive without cutting sports, which that's been one of the things that have come from this. You think about Stanford, you know, they've always pretty much won that President's Cup every year. But, you know, they had more sports than anybody. And what I think they ended up, didn't they cut 16 or 17 sports, something like that? Yeah. I think
they cut
a bunch of them. Yeah, they cut a bunch. Yeah.
Hey.
So it's affected a lot of people.
When you look at the landscape, and Seth and I talk about this all the time, you've mentioned, you know, Greg Sankey, the commissioner, the Big Ten here, you know, cut football, and now everybody's, you know, on Kevin Warren, the new commissioner. How important is a commissioner ultimately in this, or does everything fall on the university presidents?
No, I think the commissioner is really, really important, and I don't think there's one better than what we have, because I think, you know, someone that I'd really admire through this too is Adam Silver. You think about what he's had to deal with. You know, Kobe's death, that big deal over in, where was it? Owner said something. Yeah, that. Then the coronavirus. But you know what? He's been very methodical. He's done it. He's taken his time with it. He's got it done. And I think Greg Sankey's done the same thing. I think that he's looked at the whole picture, and he's tried to buy time. Everybody wants deadlines. And we don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. I mean, tomorrow something could break for the good. And so they've gone about it. You know, we're going to plan on having a season if something has to adjust. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But I do think if you don't have a a commissioner that's real strong. I think it falls back to ADs, and there are some ADs that, as you know, that are strong and have great relationship with their presidents, where their president's going to listen to them. In some situations, it might not be like that. But I do think the commissioner, I mean, and you think about this, you got two people that have been in this a long time. When you think about Greg Sankey, and you think about Johnny Swofford in the ACC, and then you have, you know, Mr. Bowlesby there in the Big 12, who I think is a terrific commissioner. They've been around, and I think that I do think they listen. I think they are going to work the best they can to do what's best for their conferences. I do think that when this is all said and done, you're going to see some different things happening. I think you're going to see some realignments. I think you're going to see some territorial type things. I think they're already talking about that in baseball, where, you know, a school in anywhere, say in North Carolina, will stay in that region pretty much. I do think this is going to have an effect on a lot of different things, and I do think that we might see some alignment come out of it.
Rick, last thing
again, finance.
You talk about, you know, running a program, or part of running a program is recruiting. So now you've had no live evaluations, you have no face to face contact with prospects. How do you go about you're only as good as your last class? How do you go about, you've gotten a great commitment, you can't mention anything about it, but Kennedy Chandler's terrific guard, I can say it. But how do you go about moving forward and recruiting and developing relationships with prospects when you really can't see them face to face besides a Zoom call or maybe a virtual campus tour or something like that? How hard has that been?
Well, you know, Seth, it's really funny. I mean, ironic. I have an unbelievable staff. And, you know, you and I, and we were in this for a long time. And when you go to those summer league games and you go see the guys you're currently recruiting, and your assistants say to you, we need to go over to this gym and watch this junior or this sophomore play, you're like, oh, my goodness, you know. But the fact of the matter is my guys have done a great job with that. So we were really working out in front a couple years in recruiting to where we had an idea. And my staff they're unbelievable. They're experienced. They work at it. The Zoom home visits have been okay. They're a little bit more difficult to be able to read people to see where you need to go with it. That's a little bit different. Always a little bit more difficult to end it the way you'd like to end it. Even though I'm not saying it's bad, it's just it's the feel part of it that you lack a little bit. But the fact is, my assistants are on it. You know, they can see all these tournaments that people are having. They can watch it, but it's still, you know, Seth, think about it. When we first got into it, you could recruit every day of the year, and not everybody did that. And you know, the ones that hustled it got out there every day. I don't care if it's May, March, whatever. And I think we all adjust. Wherever we are right now, we have to adjust. And that's kind of what's going on right now.
Had you ever heard of Zoom before this?
No. I'm getting ready to do a Zoom call with all the SEC coaches, and I tell you, I'd rather be talking to you guys, to be quite honest, you know?
Well, Barnes, I appreciate you doing this and fitting us in. And by the way, Barnes, you doing a Zoom call, right? He's not exactly a high-tech guy, except for those video games inside his fancy locker room. I would call Barnes a high-tech guy, in my opinion. What is that a right description, Barnes?
That's a right description, but I do know how to do the Zoom and all that stuff now, but that's about as far as I want to go with, to be honest with you.
Barnes is good on those video games in his lounge or his locker room, though. He whoops up on those guys every day.
Well, that's why I like to get recruits and have some fun with them and, you know, let them know that I still got a little game, you know.
That's what I'm saying. I'm saying, like, you know, there's so many different ways this thing could go. And I love the fact that basketball is being a little patient. You know, Seth, this weekend, the Indy 500 is running. And the Indy 500 did this very smart. Back when this all hit, all right, back when this all hit, Roger Penske and Doug Bowles, who runs the IMS, the Motor Speedway, Penske's the owner, said, we're pushing this back. We're clearing the zone to August 23rd. They said, we're going to have 50% capacity. But they read the numbers. Okay, we're going to have 25% capacity. Then they read the numbers more here in Marion County and Indianapolis and said, all right, we can't have fans, but we're going to run. So they're going to run. It's I love what basketball is doing. I love what the SEC is doing and the ACC and the Big 12 in football. They're having a little patience. They're seeing what the hell is going on, and then they're moving forward. That, to me, is the only way to fly in this, Seth. It is. It's the only way, and I applaud them for doing it.
I agree with you 100%. In fact, that what Craig Robinson said yesterday, Dan Gavitt says, look, they are going to be patient. They're look and see what's happening. They've got 8,000 contingency plans. They have plans for their plans. They're looking at new ideas. I do think scheduling outside a league is going to be very, very difficult, even if you do pods in regional areas. I think exempt events could potentially end up all in Orlando because you have the facilities and you can run about four or five different events at the same time. It's all set up for television now. That's an idea I know that they've tossed around so that you can continue the exempt events, which would be great. We'd be all doing them from our living rooms probably. But I do applaud basketball. I do think that we have a voice and a seat at the table right now again. Dan Gavitt, I think he's a progressive guy. He's a really bright guy. He cares about the game. He cares about the players. He cares about the coaches. He cares about the product. I think we're in a really, really good place. I think if we can get the Power Five conferences on the same page and create a protocol of some sort that could be a uniform protocol, that would help immeasurably. But that protocol might change because things are going to be changing day to day. So we got that problem. Now I got a question for you. You've been watching the NBA stuff, right? I know you were because we were going back and forth a little bit, texting back and forth. The process. Have you ever seen a team? Yes, I'm serious. I mean, like, first of all, the defense in the bubble has been non-existent overall. And that just shows you do need to practice. You do need to, like, the closeouts, rotations. It's just been a joke. But I watched the 76ers play yesterday. And I literally, I'm not sure there was anyone on that team that really was committed to winning. It was the weirdest game I'd ever watched. And then on the other hand, the team that they were playing was very committed to winning. What's your take on life in the bubble in the NBA and the playoffs so far?
Seth, we talk about, and you've talked about it, being a good teammate, being accountable, all that stuff. I think maturity is factored in here. I said on my radio show before the bubble started, two teams. One was going to be awful, and I said the 76ers, because I don't care what anybody tells me. This is before Ben Simmons got hurt. He's an immature kid. These guys, the 76ers are the kind of players that talk. They talk. They're not serious. They just talk. They're immature. The team that I really like, and I hate to say it, is the Heat. The Miami Heat, you talk about closeouts. You talk about taking away the lane and then getting out the shooters, being in help side early. The Heat are a mature, incredibly well-coached team. Two teams, you know what? One supposedly has superstars, Embiid and Simmons, blah, blah, blah. The other is just a collection of guys with a real tough guy in Jimmy Butler. But, man, I'm disgusted by the Philadelphia 76ers. Philadelphia 76ers are a freaking joke. Immature. And the Heat, on the other hand, I don't think they're good enough to win it, but they at least have a maturity and a toughness. I have words on my show, Seth, and it's simply this. 76ers give me gas. That's what they do, Seth. They give me freaking gas.
Well, I'll tell you. I mean, I was the Celtics lost Gordon Hayward.
Right.
17-point a game scorer. And they've got guys like I put it into a different. I think there are winning players and guys just play to play, and guys that are that literally say I'm going to play to my strengths. I'm gonna, like Jason Tatum's a stud. He's a star.
Yeah.
But they've got a guy like Marcus Smart, even though he shot a couple threes yesterday. I didn't understand, but that guy's going to play to win. All right. I mean, they've got Kemba Walker's going to play to win. All right. I mean, they've got guys that you know Jaylen Brown's going to play to win. I mean, that's just the way it is. I mean, as I'm watching the playoffs, I see more and more stuff like the Raptors. They got winning players. Fred VanVleet, they didn't get drafted. He's a winning player. OG Anunoby, you and I love that. I mean, he's a winning player. Siakam is a winning player. I mean, I think the most
–
most interesting game is the Jazz and the Mavericks. I think that series is really interesting. Go ahead.
Seth, can I add, a couple years ago, I realized that Kyle Lowry was the sixth highest paid player in the NBA, and I made fun of him. I'll make fun of him no more. I watched that kid do everything. You talk about winning player. I watched him guard yesterday at the end of the game when it was winning. Holy cow. I'm all in on the Raptors. I'm all in on that series you were talking about. And I must say this, and I'm sure we got to go, but best shootout I've ever seen, Seth. Oh, Jamal Murray and Donovan Mitchell. We can talk about March Madness, and you and I are college basketball guys. But this August, man, has been pretty damn good, man. It's been sensational. And those two guys making shots, I've never seen nothing like it. I really haven't.
All right, last thing, Lakers is another example. Like, and I understand that they're playing without Avery Bradley, and then they're missing Rondo. That's a poorly put together team. And they might win the series. I don't know if they'll come back and win. And Leonard's been incredible. But that team, obviously, you have two great players, but they don't have the right players to fit around two great players. And if you look at the guys they put around those guys, it goes back to my same thing. They're not proven winning players. They're dudes that put up numbers on bad teams. Every bad team has, like, Caldwell Pope. He's a nice player. You put him on the Detroit Pistons, he'll score 18 points a game or whatever. But, like, if you're going to have two really talented guys, and the guys around them, they're glue guys. Like, they don't have a guy as simple as Dorian Finney-Smith for the Mavericks, who just defends, makes an open three, gets rid of the ball, hits his hand, boom, it's gone. It's ridiculous. I mean, if you look at the Mavs, every guy that comes in does what they're supposed to do. I don't know if they can win the series. I don't think the Clippers are a team that has a good chemistry about them. I just think we're really seeing teams that have good chemistries, bad chemistries, good players but bad chemistries, good players but players don't. It just shows you that the idea of how to put together a winning team is more than acquiring talent. It's acquiring the talent around the talent that determines winning and losing.
I agree. I mean, I agree with absolutely everything that you said. Now, having said that, as you well know, the NBA playoffs are a little like NFL football. One game changes the narrative completely, right? I also got to say this, Seth. I don't like watching Damian Lillard play. I freaking set my day by watching Damian Lillard play, man. Look, I know back in the day, Rick Mount pulled up from three-quarter court, according to people at Purdue. I know back in the day, but we've never seen skill level like this. We've never seen consistency of shot like this from all sizes. And Damian Lillard, to me, has replaced, at least for this year, Steph Curry as the poster child for that. He has been ridiculously fun to watch. And Seth, let me ask you this. Again, I know we got to go, but I love 1 o'clock, 4 o'clock, 6:30, and 9 o'clock basketball every day, all day. And then I got hockey, and then I got the Cubs on with doublehead. I know we're all supposed to be negative and sad, but this is an unbelievable sports month we got going right now, Seth Greenberg. Let's go.
No doubt about it. And you know what? If basketball comes back in November and the NBA doesn't start until January or Christmas, we could create college basketball from November to Christmas and absolutely own the sporting window.
Should be every day. And everybody needs to be flexible. Play your game at 1 o'clock, put it on ESPN. Play your game at 3:30, put it on ESPN. Go all day. And, you know, Seth, the reality is sports gambling is available in a lot of places. It's legal in the United States, and that adds to it as well. That's just the reality. People are home over Thanksgiving. People are home between Christmas. What a great opportunity. Hopefully everybody stays healthy and smart, and we can get it done.
Who's your partner today?
Well, it's going to be talent against production. It's Tirico and I. He's in for the Indy 500 against our producers when we were doing Tuesdays, Bart Fox and our director, Scott Johnson. It's a grudge match. I arrive at the course talking, and I don't stop talking, pressing, and betting until the last dog dies. And
basically a typical television broadcast for you.
Pretty much. Yeah. or a typical golf match for you. I've learned from the best. Always chirp. The greatest thing about playing golf with you would have been separate carts back.
Well, hit them well, my friend.
Thank you for listening to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. You can listen and subscribe to all ESPN podcasts in the Listen tab of the ESPN app, including the latest from the NBA and the Hoop Collective podcast, available in the ESPN app or Apple Podcast.